This is the one set 600 years after the last episode.
On a glorious water world.
The pink prawn from Primark returns after being shot.
To save the Doctor.
But he doesn't remember who she is.
Lucy Bleatin' Miller.
It's called Orbis.
Here we go.
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tarmadark, Dalek, Space Time, and Glam Rock.
Starlet phones are awful, that's the TARDIS way.
We're a punk in a Mary's Kane.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when?
Reviewing all the poo there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook, even those are gobbledygook. We'll review them all, you see, so join us on this odyssey. It's Who Back When?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
Yes, you are.
Oh, God, why will you never oblige? And you are JD. Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
And today, we are reviewing the enchantment under the sea that is Orbis, which is an audiobook.
It is. You know, if you wish to sing along to this episode, there are some amazingly good soundtracks, including Little Trees' Help, I'm a Fish, and Under the Sea by the Little Mermaid. If you wish to go a little bit more highbrow, you can always watch Finding Nemo.
That is more highbrow.
The Little Trees' Help, I'm a Fish, yes. It is Shakespearean in comparison.
Okay, fair enough. So this is the season 3 opener, is it?
Correct. It is. It's gone down to 30-minute episodes, so there's two 30-minute episodes rather than being one 60-minute episode, which a normal-length episode will be. But
it feels even shorter than that, which is exactly what she said. But yes, it feels incredibly short. It's very compact. Either way, this is the season 3 opener, so what this follows on from is the cliffhanger that was dealt to us by the Vengeance of Morbius. We had the Doctor throwing himself off a balcony, or falling off a balcony anyway, alongside Morbius, to his death. We had Lucy being shot in the face/chest. We're going to talk about that, JD, by the headhunter in the post-credit sequence. We had essentially all of Doctor Who being disintegrated before our very ears. And here we are again.
And we are. So let us jump in to a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Let's.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
The Headhunter and her companion, Lucy Miller, are off to save the universe. A TARDIS is dying, and the universe is at stake, so off they travel to the planet of Orbis to save it.
The Headhunter has gained the TARDIS from the Sisterhood of the Teleporting Pants, and the Doctor isn't dead after all. He's actually been teleported out to somewhere safe.
Lucy and the Headhunter, who just wants to sell the TARDIS but can't, go on a journey with a sick and ill space-time machine to try and get the Doctor to cooperate. Lucy is shot with magic bullets. The Doctor is shot with magic bullets. Seafood is being killed left, right, and centre. It's the Little Mermaid.
In space.
You are welcome.
Yeah, if anything, that B-Scale just clarified it.
Let's jump straight into Orbis.
We actually get
a recap.
Let's bullet point this bad boy.
We have a previous line, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Which is Lucy being shot.
Yes. I've got a question for you right away. Where does she get shot?
In London. Or Blackpool, rather.
Okay, yes, in Blackpool. I can't do it. I can't do the accent. Where does she get shot on her person?
In the head.
Bingo. Yes. Then, later on, it is referred to as in the chest. Then, it is referred to as it is traveling, the quantum time bullet or whatever it is, spoiler alert, is slowly but surely closing in on her brain, like traveling into her brain. Then, the headhunter says, do you want me to shoot you in the chest again? Continuity, man.
Okay, that is a bit bad.
Yeah.
Lucy wakes up in the TARDIS.
Yes, she does. She is a little bit flummoxed, but the headhunter says, actually, this may in fact be the answer to my question. The headhunter basically just goes, oh, Jesus Christ, just look around. Let's connect the brain to the mouth. Doesn't quite work, and then does what sounds like shooting her again.
Yeah, she unshoots her.
I thought she unshot her, and that's when she woke up in the TARDIS.
When she woke up,
yeah.
Correct.
But it does sound, and ladies and gentlemen, if you've listened to this audiobook, you will be able to confirm or deny, but it does sound as though she shoots her again. So possibly she shoots her in both the head and the chest.
And she only unshoots her once. Yeah,
it makes no sense.
It's a little bit strange.
Yeah.
But anyway, we get some banter between Lucy and the headhunter, and we find out that the headhunter is hunting for the Doctor.
Yes.
Lucy obviously says, well, you're a bit out of luck because he died 6 months ago, placing the end of Vengeance of Morbius 6 months after the start.
6 months after the start?
Because the Doctor died 6 months ago, which means that the last scene of Vengeance of Morbius...
Was six months after the... Yeah, exactly. Oh, whatever. There's a discrepancy of 6 months.
So, basically, the Headhunter is on a mission to save the universe, and only one person can stop it.
Cue opening credit sequence.
Title sequence we get. Then, our Doctor.
Yeah, the Doctor apparently is busy repairing a spaceship. Whose spaceship is this? I should say, by the way, sorry, minor tangent. I have made literally no notes whatsoever about this episode, except for a whole bunch of questions. A few of which I have already asked. But yeah, whose spaceship is he working on?
No idea.
We are not told. Anyway, the Doctor is working on some kind of spaceship. He is joined by a wibbly wobbly female voice.
Yeah, Celta.
Celta, yes.
Who is a jellyfish.
Yes. She is a Kelton, and the Keltons are... They are giant jellyfish. I am already not taking this story seriously, but that's okay. Not only is she a jellyfish, she is also two things. She is, number one, very innocent. Like, she is almost childlike in a way, and has this sort of childlike devotion to the Doctor, it seems, already in this opening scene. And number two, very much takes on the characteristics, at least when I heard this, my impression was she took on the characteristics of your run-of-the-mill companion.
Yeah, she's de facto companion for at least this scene.
Yeah, okay. So in this opening scene, let's bullet point this, what we find out is, as it so happens, we are going to stumble upon the Doctor just as he, after 600 years on the planet Orbis, surrounded by jellyfish, is about to deliver the exposition about where he's from, the spaceship he used to have, and all of that whatnot to his de facto companion.
Correct. And then we skip to another Molluscari.
Yes.
Called Sacrasea.
Yeah, Sacrasea. Yeah, I don't know. One of those. Who plays her?
I'm glad you asked. Sacrasea is played by Beth Chalmers.
Ooh. Has she been in anything else?
She's been in a lot.
Yes, she has.
Beth Chalmers is basically Catriona Olsen light. When Catriona Olsen stops doing Big Finish work, the bondage cupboard is given to Beth Chalmers,
Ooh. Who
is in practically everything. And she will certainly be in an awful lot more coming up. She's in a lot this season. She also has a slightly bigger role to play in the audiobooks.
She's one of the companions, isn't she?
Yes, she plays a companion of the Seventh Doctor called Rain Creevy.
Bingo. The only thing that I found out about her was she plays one of the companions. Okay, so Rain. But she also has played...
Rain Creevy's mother.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of companions' mothers.
Yes, Ace, Mel and Molly.
Hmm.
In... Oh, I can't remember, but I know Molly's mother she played in Dark Eyes.
Okay.
I'm not sure where she played the other two.
Either way, very cool.
Absolutely. She inherits the Catriona Olsen role of she plays female in many, many audiobooks.
Okay.
So, the elderly and fat and blobby leader is called Crassastrea.
Okay.
Yeah. Who is played by Manuel from Fawlty Towers?
Yes!
Crassastrea is played by Andrew Sachs.
That is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Andrew Sachs has been in quite a bit of Doctor Who lore in that he was in Sharda, the webcast, which was the remake of the Tom Baker...
Yeah, the Douglas Adams story. That was just never completed.
Sing episode. He played the villain Scraggra in that, along with Paul McGann as the Doctor. But he also was in another audiobook called The Boy That Time Forgot, where he plays an old version of Adric, the companion who supposedly died in Peter Davison episode called Earthshock.
Ah, okay.
He plays an older version of him in the audiobooks as well. And he auditioned for the role of the Doctor.
I was going to say.
And it went to Sylvester McCoy instead. So.
Yeah, and according to TARDIS Wikia, Sylvester McCoy, Sly the Devil, he suggested that Emmanuel be the 11th Doctor.
I think they made the right choice in Matt Smith.
I would say so as well. I don't really know him. Presumably, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, but I only really know him as Manuel from Fawlty Towers. I've never even heard him speak with a non-fake Spanish accent until now, at least that I'm aware of.
Andrew Sachs is, no matter what, he will always be remembered for Fawlty Towers.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what else he does. He's been in a number of things. He's been in Coronation Street. He does a lot of voiceover stuff.
Okay.
He's done quite a few sort of TV shows that, you know, one-offs that he's played roles in, mainly not long after he did Fawlty Towers.
Okay.
But he was even, you know, he even did things before Fawlty Towers, but that was generally the first thing that...
Yeah, presumably, because he's not really, no offense, Manuel, but like, he was not a young man in Fawlty Towers.
No, I think he must be about 80. I think he's 82 or 3 now.
Well, there you go, yeah.
You know, he's not young, but he is literally still going. He was in a TV show not so long ago called Spies of Warsaw, which also starred David Tennant.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Okay, Manuel tangent over. Very, very cool, though.
We now have the mollusks.
Yeah. This guy, what's his face again? Crassus Traea. He's a crazy despot. He has just been murdering people left, right, and center. And essentially, this is explained away as a mood swing because he is undergoing some kind of sex change.
Yes, his female organs aren't developing quickly enough.
Yeah, because he's just eating plankton or whatever it was.
And he's a bit pissed off by
this. But that's all gonna change. He's gonna chow down on something much more nutritious in a little bit.
Basically, they also know that bad things are happening to Orbis, the planet.
Yeah. Is this where he holds a little speech to all of his crustacean friends? Is that later on? That might be later on. Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, one thing that... sorry, I just want to say, we didn't mention this in the very beginning with the Doctor and Celta, is he does manage to tell her that he used to travel around in a spaceship, he says, that was bigger on the inside and was called a TARDIS. He says this very clearly. The second thing he tells her is that the spaceship that he's trying to repair, the spaceship of no origin that we know of, in order to repair it, he needs a pair of tights, a pair of nylon tights.
Let's put a pin in that.
Yeah. Couple
amateur. Meanwhile, back on board
the actual TARDIS,
the headhunter is basically steering the TARDIS badly.
Yeah.
Lucy says that the 20 books, or the 17 books rather, that the headhunter has read, basically is just how to press the start button.
Yeah, and it's the quick start guide.
Yeah, the manual actually has its own library.
Yeah, which is like the size of a street.
So we find out that the headhunter got the TARDIS from the Sisterhood of Khan! and they, in fact, teleporting pantsed the Doctor out.
Yeah.
And sent him somewhere else.
Yeah, somewhere worse, in fact, says the headhunter. And also the reason that, well, they are now like in the process of landing on Orbis. The reason this is not going very well is that, like, they're about to slingshot away to Orbis. They're not on Orbis yet, but the reason this isn't going very well and why the TARDIS is sort of wibbly-wobbling all over the place is that the universe is literally disintegrating because the Doctor's absence from the TARDIS has made it sick. Correct me if I'm wrong, right? Like, because but his absence has made the TARDIS sick, and the TARDIS is now, it's essentially crapping all over space-time. She says there is time waste, I think is the term, or space-time waste all over the universe.
Yeah, it's disintegrating and it's basically sprinkling waste everywhere.
Yeah, so now we have an objective, or Lucy has an objective anyway, not just get the Doctor, but save the universe. Like, reunite him with his TARDIS.
Correct. So we now
go back to Orbis.
Back to Orbis.
Yeah.
The Doctor is now talking to yet another jellyfish.
Yeah.
Who, like Lassie, is trapped down a well.
Yeah. And says that it got stuck in this sink well and can't move its legs.
Yeah.
It doesn't have legs.
It's a jellyfish.
Yeah. This is another one of my questions. Like, why does Jelly Furtado refer to her legs? It turns out, by the way, it's a he.
Yes. I don't know anymore. They lower some rope made out of seaweed, which they wrap around the limbs, they say this time, okay, not legs. And he's basically pulled up out of the well.
It is entirely without consequence. This is not important. However, it does lead to a meeting between the doctor and Janosch, who is like the elder. He's basically the leader of the, what are they called again? The Kelton?
The jellyfish.
Yeah.
Janos is thankfully played by someone like I can interject some use into.
Nice.
He's played by Barry McCarthy, who was in the previous episode as the Time Lord Bulek.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, that's about as interesting as it gets. So there's talk of, you know, other jellyfish dying because they haven't made the walls around the sea big enough.
Yeah, there's a storm, the water levels are rising, and their city is drowning, the doctor says.
The doctor reminds them of the time when they killed the oysters, i.e. the mollusks that we talked about a few minutes ago, played by Manuel.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically the doctor is helping the jellyfish and has done for a very, very long time.
Yeah, for 600 years. How old does this make the doctor?
Well,
because what I'm thinking is,
we get a lot of explanations about this in here. We do not know how long an Orbisian year is.
Okay, that's true, but he has, spoiler alert, well, we already said it in the B-Scale, he doesn't remember who Lucy is. I mean, he's forgotten more or less everything about mankind. It's been quite a long time.
Yeah, but it might only have been
a consequence of him dying, you mean?
100 years, or, yeah, and he was teleported out, and, you know, the teleportation effect from the traveling pants could have done things. We don't know.
Okay, that's very true. The sense that I got was, this is going to be a TNG reference, I can't remember the name of the episode, but do you remember the episode where Picard lives an entire life with this people?
It's generally considered one of the best episodes.
Yeah, it's a fantastic episode. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, it's called The Inner Light.
Bingo, yes. And he gets the flute and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. But essentially, it's an entire lifetime in almost the blink of an eye. And
it's a masterclass of acting by Patrick Stewart.
Oh, it's amazing. Such a good episode. But that's almost the sense that I get here from Enchantment Under the Sea. That it's this microcosm, but it takes up no space. But we're talking time here. So it's like, it's 600 years in the Doctor's lifespan, but it's actually just the blink of an eye.
I've had an idea.
Hit me.
Well, you know, in 18 years' time, when we finish Doctor Who,
we can
have a podcast called Trek Back Then.
I'm up for that. I am absolutely up for that.
Book me in for 2030.
Okay, cool.
Right, so we skip back to the oysters.
32. Yeah? Yeah.
I've forgotten what year it is. We skip back to the oysters.
Yes.
And Crassostrea's female genital organs are... I can't believe this episode.
Those are words coming out of your mouth right now, by the way.
Crassostrea's female genital organs are basically developing. And the oysters...
This surely must be the meeting.
And this is the meeting.
Okay.
So... Crassostrea, who is now female and was male before, but still played by Andrew Sachs.
Yeah. Brilliantly, by the way.
Yeah, basically says that they are now going to try and take over Orbis and, you know, not even the Doctor can stop them.
Yeah. Essentially, it's the Senate from Star Wars. They've all met up and they've reached a consensus, which is because of the storms on the planet Orbis, now suddenly the biosphere or whatever, the planetary meteorological conditions are no longer conducive to jellyfish survival. However, they are perfect for the crustacean. What are they called again? God damn it. The molluscari. Yeah. They're perfect for the molluscari.
The oysters.
The oysters. Hence, the planet must now go to the oysters because they could live there. How this makes sense, I don't know. But basically, we don't know why the meteorological conditions have changed, but because of the meteorological conditions, they essentially have the legal right to take over this planet.
It makes so little sense. So,
yeah, like it's not an invasion is what I'm trying to say. It's like bureaucracy rather.
So thankfully we go back to the TARDIS where two decent characters are having a conversation.
Yeah, and they're finally arriving.
Yeah.
No, wait, sorry. Yeah, there's a puking scene first.
Yeah, Lucy's not well because of all the buffer comforting. The headhunter shouts at her. And to be honest, they are actually having good characterization with each other.
Yeah.
As they do every time when they're together.
Yeah.
And she admits that she has sold the TARDIS, but the buyer doesn't want a vessel which is basically dying and destroying the universe. So basically, she's turned up to try and find the Doctor so the Doctor can fix it and then give her the ship back.
Bingo.
Lucy just says, well, yeah, that's really going to work. And then the headhunter goes, well, there's still a quantum-tipped time bullet in your brain.
That's the brain in her chest, by the way, in case you were wondering.
And if the Doctor doesn't cooperate, then she won't unshoot her again.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile...
Wait, hang on. Do they not arrive? They've arrived now, right? No? Still not?
No.
Oh, it's
no,
later on. Oh, God.
They've still not arrived. But back under the sea, the Doctor is talking to his erstwhile fake companion, Celta.
Yeah.
That he's never seen a moon like Orbis's moon.
Yeah. In fact, he's never even noticed that Orbis had a moon.
Yeah, because this one is in geostationary orbit above a position about 50 miles out into the ocean.
Yeah. I'm sure this isn't going to factor into the plot later on, by the way.
I absolutely wouldn't. But we find out that a jellyfish tradition has been replaced their old tradition of eating and throwing up their own dead.
Yeah.
Just to refertilize the ocean.
Me so horny. Okay, so... I cannot believe we're having this conversation right now. Okay.
I can't believe this episode exists.
Wait, ladies and gentlemen, before we started recording this, and spoiler alert, we're recording this immediately after having recorded our review of Dalek with Eccleston, which was just mind-blowingly amazeballs. Before we press record on this one, we actually agreed that we kind of liked this episode. What happened, JD? What happened?
We do like the episode. We actually do like this episode. The problem is, it's just... It's likable in the same way as I like Frozen.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
And I like Finding Nemo.
I like that.
You know,
I would rate Finding Nemo above this.
Well, yes, mainly because it's got likeable characters. But then again, this does have Andrew Sachs.
Yes, it does. And correct me if I'm wrong, he's about to insert a data curl into his information flap. Or something. Like, it's the most sexual way of absorbing information. It's fantastic. But wait. Sorry, I cut you off there.
Yeah, Jellyfish Companion goes off with the Doctor to the funeral dance. But before they can get there, a huge clam appears, which means that the oysters have turned up again. Do you know what? I didn't realise that this episode would involve me saying so many fish jokes. I don't know why I didn't realise that. So the clam starts landing. And
this is the main plot of most of my dreams, by the way.
The clam starts landing, and... Crassostrea intends to blow up the jellyfish, but Sacastrea turns around and goes, well, we haven't got the right to do that yet. The council's still in session. We're only here to tell the jellyfish that they're going. Okay. Meanwhile...
Wait, hang on. Is this not the... Okay, I'm going to whisper this in your ear. So, ladies and gentlemen, just cover your ears for no spoilers. Isn't this where he snips off the tentacle of Janosch?
Yes. And then we're about to get to that bit. Yes. Crassostrea is basically starting to mock the jellyfish and point out how pretty useless they are.
Yeah.
The Doctor goes, didn't you used to be Andrew Sachs? And now you're Andrea Sachez. And I can't believe this episode.
He does also, he actually does say, I hardly recognized you. Like, you don't look like whatever, blah, blah, blah. I can't actually remember the start off for this quote unquote joke. They take this to be racism. And he then goes, oh, no, I didn't mean this as in, like, you don't look good. I meant this as in, or like, as a species. I meant this as in, like, for starters, you used to be male. Now you're female. And he goes, oh, right, you noticed. And then the Doctor adds, but you don't look very female. Like, you don't look much like females. That seems oddly judgmental. I'm really sorry, but that has weird undertones.
Yeah. It's like a joke that should have come off, but really didn't.
Yeah, it actually comes off as sort of sexist slash, what would that be, transgenderist? As in, like, you know what I mean?
It would count as transphobic, I would say.
Transphobic.
But it's not intended in any stretch of the imagination to be. It's just a badly written joke.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. It's kind of offensive in a way. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
We find out that In 3 days, the oysters will have the right to Orbis.
Oh, 3 days. So, I listened to this audiobook twice today, and I didn't even pick up on that.
The jellyfish have 3 days to get away.
Okay, cool.
Castrea hands over this USB stick.
Yeah, essentially, which he pulls out of his, newly formed vagina. And literally, that is what it is, right? Sacastrea. It's Sacastrea. He goes, hey, Sacastrea, give me the USB stick. And she goes, oh, I thought you had it. Oh, no, wait, sorry, I forgot it. It's still in my vagina. Pulls it out, hands it to Crassastrea. He then is about to give it to Janos. Janos reaches for it. Crassastrea, a.k.a. Manuel, snips off Janos's tentacle. This is insane.
It is insane, but I've got a bigger question.
Okay.
Snips it off with a pincer, a crab.
Yeah, exactly.
Since when do oysters have pincers?
Well, this is an alien oyster, man. This is like a lobster dude.
Yeah, but they're oysters, not lobsters.
Are they actually oysters? Wait, sorry, hang on. Where did we get oysters from?
Are they mollusks? Mollusks are snails. So no matter what you listen to in this episode, right, you've got clams, right?
Because I kind of imagined lobsters flying around in clam spaceships.
Well, you see, the clam indicated the oyster because, you know, you've got an oyster inside a clam shell.
Yeah.
A pearl, which is produced from a vagina, indicates an oyster.
Oh, yeah, that's the USB stick. Yes, you're right.
The USB stick.
Yeah.
So everything points to oysters.
Oysters.
The clam ship, the clam data USB pearl vagina.
I'm so crazy aroused right now.
And but clams don't have pincers. They have shells that...
Maybe that's what he does. Maybe that is what he does. He goes like, hey, reach into my vagina and pluck out my pearl. When he reaches in there, the clam snips shut and just flam. The tentacle is stuck in there, cut off. I think logistically that makes sense.
Yeah. I think we're overthinking the episode.
Very possibly.
Anyway, now that she's cut off the tentacle...
the doctor steps in.
And gets the USB pearl.
And then he whips out his sonic screwdriver and goes, yeah, we're going to look at this and we're going to think about it, but in the meantime, you think about this. And then he sonics Crassastrea. He sonics Manuel, basically, at the exact frequency to wibble and wobble him out of his shell. So he is now a completely naked oyster or... lobster or snail. Ugh.
Thank God there's a wheezing groaning sound and the TARDIS appears.
Tablamo!
And the headhunter arrives. Thank God.
Yeah. Lucy steps outside. Unfortunately, outside there's an ocean, and unfortunately on the ocean there's a storm. So she just kind of floats away. There's a high salt content, the headhunter says. So Lucy basically just floats away. This is it. I think that's one bullet point done.
And then she goes back inside the TARDIS and makes a phone call and says that they will be arriving at dawn.
Yeah, exactly. She goes, yeah, basically, come pick me up. Like, this is where I am. Come pick me up.
Robinson Miller.
Yeah.
washes up on...
in the Blue Lagoon.
And she opens her eyes and screams as she finds a huge tentacled jellyfish.
Yeah, this is now the second time in a row that Lucy is insanely racist. At first sight, when she first encounters a non-bipedal alien, her first reaction is to go just Nazi.
But we get the world's stupidest explanation, because she calms down fairly quickly once she realizes the jellyfish is sentient. Because it turns out that the jellyfish is in fact
Celta,
fake companion.
Yeah.
So Lucy says, right, really sorry, I've got a problem with jelly because of a party I went to.
Yeah, and don't ask me about it, just trust me, you don't want to hear it. Oh, by the way, Lucy, you are totally right, I don't.
Lucy starts to complain that she's got wet tights, which jellyfish companion says, ooh, that's a guy, the doctor needs them, and basically rips Lucy's tights off her.
Yeah, before she does that, I want to return to a pin we popped in the plot earlier on, because the doctor didn't just tell fake companion Celta that he needed tights to repair the spaceship that came from God knows where. He also said that he used to travel around in a spaceship called the TARDIS. Now, when Celta encounters Lucy, she says, Celta says, you speak Kelton. And Lucy goes, no, you speak English. Never mind. It's the TARDIS that's translating this. And Celta does not react to another mention of the TARDIS immediately after having learned about this, which clearly should have rung a much bigger, more bodacious bell than tights. But when she hears tights, she basically just goes, holy shitballs, I'm going to strip you right now and go and fix this spaceship we don't care about.
So the Doctor, the Doctor is meanwhile fixing the mini ship, and Celta is running basically over to him, waving the tights around, brandishing them happily.
Yeah.
And Lucy Miller is screaming at her, as Lucy does.
You will be pleased to know that was my last question that I've written, by the way.
Right. So, anyway, the Doctor is really happy to see the pair of tights.
Yeah, but does not recognise Lucy Bleeding Miller.
No, and he says, well, it's been 600 years since I last saw another human.
Yeah. Lucy has a little bit of sort of an emotional breakdown at this point.
Yeah.
Well, it's either now or it's at the start of the next episode. Spoiler alert, this is the end of part one. But Lucy, either way, she kind of breaks down a little bit and goes, wait, what? Like, I cried for weeks, months even. I couldn't sleep. I thought you were dead and this is crazy and blah, blah, blah. And the Doctor just goes, no, it is now. It's not the next one. And the Doctor just goes, yep. I'm sorry, who are you? Boom, end of part one.
So start of part two. The Doctor says, well, I've last few hundred years, my long-term memory's not been brilliant. And, looking at you, where do you come from?
The 1980s!
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she is very pissed. Starts ranting in not
info
the most...
Dump.
Sorry?
She rants in info dump. She rants, oh, witness protection scene, timescale, yeah. Adventures.
Yeah, I was going to say in robots. Not the most grammatical of manners.
No. And then Lucy hits him in the face.
Yes, she does. And does this already trigger something now? Yes, it does. Yes, it does trigger something now.
Yes, because he says he hasn't heard a Cockney accent in quite a while.
Ah, no, wait, sorry, I was going to say something else. But yes, you were right. He identifies her accent as Cockney. She gets even more upset, slaps him.
She's obviously from Blackpool, not Cockney.
Yeah, exactly. Slaps him across the face, and this now... remember that when we recorded a different review, namely Eccleston's Dalek, I said, let's put a pin in this and return to this later on. Let's return to that pin right now. That pin, reminder, ladies and gentlemen, was when Rose put her hand on the Dalek and the DNA of a time traveler seeped into the Dalek and sort of activated it, regenerated it in a way. The same thing now happens when Lucy slaps the Doc across the face. Because she's been traveling around in time, that energy transferred into the Doc through the slap, and he starts to remember a few things.
Yeah, and the fake companion basically just tells Lucy to go away.
Yeah, and the Doctor doesn't disagree. I'm sorry, by the way, if the memory kind of relapse turns up a little bit later on. Does not matter.
No, he does start remembering now because he says, oh, hold on, Orbis hasn't had a moon before.
Bingo, you're right. So it kind of it jolts his memory a little bit. Yeah,
the slap has done that.
Yeah.
So anyway, plot lines start converging as the wheezing, groaning TARDIS arrives and the headhunter comes out to meet Saxtrea, who was apparently the person she's trying to sell the TARDIS to.
Yes. And that's it, isn't it? It's essentially just a cutscene.
So, the Doctor fixes the mini-ship.
Yep. Does this pan out, by the way?
What, the mini-ship?
Yeah. Not really. Like, it powers up and... Oh, maybe he uses it to plug in the USB vagina pearl.
Yeah, there's a whole lot going on here. And not any of it is relevant.
Okay.
He figures out that what he needs to do is figure out what the moon is. So, Celta, our fake companion, says, well, why don't you go and ask the prawn if he knows what happens to the TARDIS?
Yeah, the prawn being Lucy.
And then the Doctor... suddenly goes, yeah, hold on, you're a jellyfish, and she's from Blackpool. The only way that you're going to be able to communicate with each other is if the TARDIS is here.
Bada bing. Now he heads off to find Lizzie Miller? Is that her name again?
Lizzie Miller!
Lizzie Miller, yes.
Lizzie Blinkin' Miller.
Yeah.
So,
back on the Moluscari clamship, Headhunter and Manuel, they're looking on as all these crustacean clam lobster snails are diving down underwater to retrieve something. We don't yet know what it is, but they're trying to dive down there, and they're in fact diving so incredibly, to such incredible depths that their shells are cracking under the pressure. They're just dying. Manuel doesn't care though, being the crazy sadist despot bonkers person that he is, sends more of them down. Is that it? Do they actually find something? Not yet? Cutscene,
no. Maybe?
No. Alright. Cut back to the Doc.
Yeah. The Doc catches up with Lucy and finds out that the headhunter has a TARDIS.
Yeah. This is where we get the explanation as well for of the slap.
And it's the chronon particles on her fingertips.
Yada, yada, yada.
And it's reinvigorating him, so...
Fair enough. I would feel pretty reinvigorated myself if Lucy Bleeding Miller slapped me across the face. Anyway.
So he wants the TARDIS because he wants to go and go to the moon and save the jellyfish.
Yeah. Is this where he asks her to slap him again? Actually get kind of a fun scene.
Yeah, because basically he says, well, Orbis is now where I live and I'm not going traveling anymore. And Lucy slaps him.
Yeah. It is kind of fun because she also, while slapping him, explains how to spell her name.
Because he's been getting it wrong. And it is literally L, slap, U, slap, C, slap.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's very good.
Stay tuned. On the next episode of Who Back When, we will spell the rest of her name.
Well, no, I think, you know, we've mocked this episode enough. Let's have a soundbite of Lucy Miller spelling her name, because we cannot have enough Sheridan Smith.
Soundbite!
It's Lucy! L!
Oh!
U,
ouch.
C, oh. I, ah. E, Lucy Bleeding Miller.
Oh, Sheridan. Right.
Slap me. Anyway.
Fake companion comes over to stop the bitch slapping.
Yeah. Says, hey, my compadre Janosch, the elder jellyfish hombre, he's received word from the Galactic Senate from Star Wars, and let's all find out what that was about.
The Doctor talks to the Emperor Palpatine's group.
Yep.
And they turn around to the Doctor and tell him to F off, really. They're not listening to him. And the clam ship is arriving.
Yeah, pretty sure we've had a cutscene of whatever it was they were looking for under the water before being found under the water.
Yes, but we still don't know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So now they arrive, blah, 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 blah. And what's his face, Manuel? He basically goes, listen, this is now our place. However, we will... Okay, stop me if I'm getting ahead of the plot here. But he says something to the effect of, we will, however, not kick all of you out, those of you who want to stay here, we are prepared to keep some of you around, form an orderly line and prepare to be processed.
Just in time to save this episode, the headhunter turns up.
Thank God.
And says, well, you've lived with these people for hundreds of years, but the jellyfish are going to all die. Everyone starts arguing with everyone else. Lucy starts biting jellyfish left, right and centre.
Yeah. And the Doctor goes, listen, here, let's split up a little bit. I'm going to chat with the bipeds. Janosch and fake companion Celta, you go off and talk to the crustacean snail lobster clams. And by the way, Celta, here, take my sonic drive screwer, as she refers to it. If in doubt, maybe wibble wobble them a little bit.
They head off. Lucy punches the headhunter. And then the headhunter shoots her in the chest this time.
Wait, what? Really?
Lucy, yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. Completely forgot about that. Does she not also, however... Wait.
She's now got, yes, one in the brain and one in the chest.
One in the brain, okay. Fuck, maybe this does make sense then. God damn it. I was really happy that I'd found a plot hole. Anyway.
The clams start arriving and...
On the shore. Like, they're there.
Yeah.
But hang on, wait. The headhunter, while the headhunter is with the doc, doesn't she go, here is basically all I want you to do now. I will freaking extract and sort of unshoot and extract the bullets from... Lucy Miller's chest brain, and I will give you back your TARDIS if you disable this. And she holds up the coral encrusted whatever it is that they retrieved from the bottom of the sea.
And the Doctor points out that it is the pendant of Morbius that was the remote activator for the Hand of Omega.
The stellar manipulator.
So 600 years have passed and it's, you know, corralled up in the bottom of the ocean. So all the plots come together. She wants the Doctor to turn off the stellar manipulator because it can only be turned off by a Time Lord.
Yeah.
The Headhunter got Lucy here in order to get the Doctor to cooperate because otherwise Lucy would die.
Yeah.
Because... he thinks Lucy and the Headhunter are in cahoots for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
We don't know what the Headhunter's plan is at all.
No, not yet. She seems to be one of those incredibly well-organized but unsuccessful criminals who are just sort of dealing with every single front.
Yeah.
I mean, she's trying to sell the TARDIS to someone whilst offering the TARDIS to the Doctor, whilst getting the crustacean lobster clam snails to get this object for her because somehow it is tied to a deal that she's doing with Manuel. It's all happening at the same time. And spoiler alert, nothing kind of, like basically nothing works out for her. She just cannot catch a break.
No. So meanwhile, the oysters told the jellyfish that five ships can't actually take all of them, so they're sending a lot more ships. And then she says, well, I am glad you're turning a different colour. I am glad you're afraid, because afraid jellyfish are best jellyfish. Yum, yum. Basically, they're going to take them all and eat them.
Yeah, that's what the whole processing was about.
It's gone from Doctor Who and Finding Nemo to being V now.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Very good reference. Very, very applicable.
So Lucy now starts talking about the TARDIS is dying as well. And this does start to get the Doctor's attention, because previously he's just thinking that she's a mad woman in a box. Then the headhunter turns up to save the scene from being terribly boring. And says, over there on that beach, someone's having barbecue.
Yeah. Put another jellyfish on a barbie.
And Manuel is put Manuel in the ratatouille. is telling the rest of the oysters, try not to, you know, burn the jellyfish too much.
Yeah.
Because they want them alive.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Manuel or Manuela is now essentially treating them as just food. They may be alive, but they are just food. And then Celta produces what in her mind is a weapon. She produces the sonic drive screwer and not just wibble wobbles Manuel out of the shell or clamp, whatever it is, but in fact freaking kills him.
Sacastrea, yes.
Oh, really? Oh, Sacastrea, yeah. Sorry.
She kills Sacastrea.
Okay.
And then threatens to do it to Andrew Sachs.
Okay, sorry.
But
not to seem racist towards lobster clam snail people, but
they all look alike.
They all look alike. I'm really sorry.
Yes. Anyway, the Doctor turns up thankfully and says, right, Sonic isn't a weapon, stop it.
Yeah.
And he realizes Celta probably isn't companion material, so abandons her on Earth with something in her forehead. Oh no,
that's a
Adam.
Different one.
That's Adam.
Yeah. That's the next one. That's not the only thing the Doc realizes. He also realizes that in order for... That basically the crustacean lobster snail clams, they have been manipulating the weather and manipulating the circumstances on the planet. And in order for them to even present a report to the Galactic Senate of Star Wars, they must have been dealing them incredibly detailed information about the meteorological conditions on Orbis. Too detailed for them to ever have found out without a spy, without an inside jellyfish, and that inside jellyfish is Celta.
Yeah, so Celta's totally Jar Jar Binksing all of this now.
Yeah, in your face, Celta.
And
comes here, tries to usurp Lucy's position. How dare you?
Anyway, the headhunter turns up and says, right, you're one Time Lord with one Sonic driver screwer. This is just not going to work. So she says, well, have your TARDIS and go.
To the headhunter. Wait, sorry.
Well, the headhunter has the TARDIS inside the clamship.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you are totally right.
And then Andrew Sachs basically says, go. But the Doctor says, well, no, this is my home. I am jellyfish. Ich bin ein Unjellyfish.
Gorgeous.
So he refuses to leave. You know, Lucy's finally bothered to turn up in this episode and basically says, hold on, you're going to eat the jellyfish. And she's now righteously indignant.
Yeah. And also says, why do you guys actually want to deactivate this machine, the remote activator? Why do you want to remote deactivate the remote activator? And Doc just goes, wait, hang on, that's a really reasonable question. Which is probably where he starts thinking, hang on, it's pretty unlikely at this point that she is in cahoots with the headhunter.
Yeah, and we get a Mexican standoff at this point now.
Yeah.
Because Lucy basically turns around and goes, right, just come on, let us just save all the jellyfish. And the Doctor says, no one that nice could possibly work with the headhunter. And he takes out the remote control for the Hand of Omega and says, right, Catriona.
Unshoot this woman.
Unshoot this woman, and I'll do all of this. So she agrees.
Yeah.
Unshoots Lucy, and then rather than turning off the Hand of Omega, he's actually turned it up to full.
Yeah, he's amplifying it. He's just turning it all the way up to 11. And just to clarify, this is not a lie on his part. Because just because it's never worded as a lie, when the headhunter goes, if I do that, if I unshoot Lucy Miller, will you deactivate activate the remote activator, whatever, blah, blah. Will you turn it off? He doesn't say yes. All he says is, it's already in my hand.
Yep. He's not lying at this
point. He's not lying.
And then basically the moon starts heading towards Orbis.
Yeah, because this is not a moon.
It is, in fact,
the stellar manipulator. Holy Jesus balls. This is now having a massively adverse effect on the meteorological conditions. It turns out that is, in fact, the reason for the storms in the first place.
So what now happens is it starts going catastrophically wrong.
Yeah.
Because the temperature's gone up. The oceans are literally starting to evaporate. The doctor turns to Manuel and goes, right, everyone to the clamships.
But Manuel goes, no. The temperature, all of these things combined, all of a sudden, I'm spawning.
And they start eating each other.
Yeah. Also, I'm not entirely sure. So they get mega hungry because they're in the process of giving birth, and that's what they do, I guess.
But, yes.
But do they also actually give birth? As in, do all the lobster clam snails, do they start giving birth and then the babies start eating people? Or jellyfish?
I guess so. That's what I took away from this.
Yeah, and then he goes... Yeah, sorry, go for it.
The headhunter snarks that, well, you've fucked everything up now, haven't you?
Yeah.
So the doctor could now leave in the TARDIS, because it's here. But the doctor really, really believes the jellyfish are his people.
Yeah.
But the jellyfish
don't want him anymore.
They're all dying.
Yeah, they're all dying. But surely after 600 years, to them, the doctor is this messiah in a way. Like, he's this mythical individual who's been there longer than any one of them has been alive. Like, any one of them has even ever been aware of the planet's existence. He has been on it. Yeah. And now because of this tiny snafu where he almost kills all of them or is in the process of causing all of their deaths, they just abandon him. They shouldn't. Really, they shouldn't. When he says, listen, Janosch, I can freaking fix this. Janosch shouldn't be saying what he does say. What he does say is like, no, you leave. You've ruined everything. Just go. Just F off. What Janosch should be going is, I knew it. Yes, save us. Right?
Yeah, quick to the TARDIS.
Yeah.
But instead, the headhunter's just had enough of all this, opens the TARDIS, and Lucy and the headhunter are all for leaving at this point.
Yeah, that's not all she does.
The doctor goes, no, I am staying here. He goes all Klingon, and it's a good day to die, because everything comes to its end. Lucy has just, at this point, she has learned so much from the headhunter, but by this point, she now turns into the headhunter.
Yeah, takes the gun.
Basically takes the quantum gun and shoots the doctor.
Boom. Next thing he knows, he's waking up in the TARDIS, but there is one other thing as well that is worth mentioning. Before Lucy shoots him, the headhunter and Doc, they talk about what can we do with the remote activator to fix this. The headhunter goes, here, give it to me. He does, and she just chucks it into the water. He's like, what the fuck did you do that for? Are you crazy? And it turns out that's perfect. Like, in a way, this solves everyone's problem. Unfortunately, it's going to cost the lives of all of the jellyfish and all of the lobster snail clams, but it will cause the stellar manipulator to crash into Orbis, destroying both the remote activator and itself and Orbis, consuming all of this in one go. Which I presume means that we will not encounter, at least not encounter, this stellar manipulator again.
You'd think.
Ah, shit.
I'll give you a clue. The end of season 3 is a two-parter.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Anyway, the doctor wakes up after he is unshot on the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And he is just pissed off with everyone at this point.
Yeah.
And she points out, well, the TARDIS is now destroying the entire universe, but then the headhunter really ruins that plot line by saying, well, I made it up to motivate you.
Yeah. But she does also say, but on the other hand, guys, someone needs to be traveling around space and time to save the universe. And so far, in the Doctor's absence, we've actually been forced to do that. And we're sick and tired of it.
Yeah. The Doctor tries to teleport back to Orbis, but it's gone.
Yeah.
It's been eaten. The stellar manipulator's been eaten. Everything's gone. It's not coming back. So the headhunter says, my job here is all done, and teleports away. She's gone.
Yeah.
She's finished. She's had enough now.
Bingo. Bongo.
The doc is really pissed off and just unhappy because he wasn't able to save the jellyfish or the lobster oyster men.
Clam. Women
things. And the doc and Lucy head off to Earth.
Yeah, that's it. End of Orbis.
Reviews!
Reviews!
Okay, First off, this audiobook, yes, I did like it. I found it entertaining to a point, but that's only because it seemed even shorter than it really is. I mean, it is, did you say it's 1 hour long in total? This two episode arc is just 1 hour. Yeah. It feels even shorter than that. And for that reason, it is easy to endure. And for that reason, I can't sort of mark it down for boredom. That being said, it is way too Disney for my taste. Every single character here, in my mind, I'm not even seeing them as CGI. I'm seeing them as cartoons. And that annoys me. It's a relatively adult-themed story. Not just a relative, it is an incredibly adult-themed story. But it just takes on the characteristics of a kid's story, and I don't like that. What I do like, though, is I love Lucy's interplay with the headhunter. I love the fact that we get to see the headhunter from a slightly different point of view. She's almost taking on the characteristics, sort of rather the characteristics of an anti-hero than an antagonist in this episode, if that makes sense. She has her own interests in mind, but she is also considering the greater good. And that's fantastic. Plus, the banter is amazing. I enjoy seeing the Doctor in a quote-unquote helpless situation, only to be able to overcome that. And when he does so with gusto, and he is freaking badass in doing so. It is amazing. I love Paul McGann. He's so good. I'm going to keep this short. Plot holes. The fact that all of my notes for this entire double episode consisted of questions and Disney factors all lead me to not give this a tremendously bodacious mark. It is, that being said, not a terrible story. It's a quick fix if you need a bit of Who and you have nothing better to do. Oh, sorry, and marking it up for the tie-in to Vengeance of Morbius, I'm giving this a 2.0.
Okay.
Oh, and for Manuel as well. He's awesome.
This is a weird episode in more ways than one. Let's look at some good points here. Paul McGann is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Sheridan Smith is excellent. You know, Sheridan Smith simply has some of the best lines in this episode, bar none.
True.
Tastes like sushi when she bites the jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
The slapping and I want you to see the back of my hand. The L-U-C-I-E Lucy bleeding Miller. You know, the fish puns. So what have you got to do for the price of fish?
And also, jelly frittato.
Yeah.
Definitely my favourite one of her buns.
She's got some absolutely of the best lines. And she is true to her character. She shoots the Doctor when she wants to get her own way, which is not unusual for her, right back to Blood of the Daleks.
Mm.
This is a follow-up to Vengeance and Morbius. It's a coda to it. It's the epilogue to Vengeance and Morbius. There are some plot holes.
Wait, sorry. Some plot holes?
There are some plot holes.
We don't even know what one of the main races in this serial is.
That's not necessarily a plot hole, that's just
okay. What about the spaceship?
What, the clamship?
No, the spaceship that he's fixing for no reason whatsoever.
He likes fixing things. He's a fixer. He makes things better. So, it is a Disney movie. Absolutely. It is joyful to listen to. It's got some very good atmospherics. The music, as always, is good. You have the single best reoccurring character in an audiobook so far in Catriona Olsen's Headhunter. You have Lucy. You have the Headhunter and Lucy in at least half the scenes together. It is not perfect. I said something very similar about Max Warp, which was, this is not serious. This is not your Morbius, Blood of the Daleks, Human Resources, sci-fi, mega-serious romp. It is a good bit of fun. This is a good bit of fun. It is an enjoyable episode that, if you happen to like Disney, you might happen to like it a bit more, and if it's any consolation, I viewed it as Finding Nemo rather than cartoon characters.
Okay.
3.2.
Wow. Okay, well, you did also just say that if you like Disney, then you'll like this more. And you did earlier on in this recording say that you enjoyed Frozen.
Yes.
So let's factor that into this.
It's 3.2 if you like Disney. If you don't like Disney, go with your score.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. All right, well, thank you very much. Yes, okay, fine. So you have opened my eyes a little bit with that, but I would like to add something, and that is, while Max Warp, yes, it was also a good bit of fun, it was a more grown-up good bit of fun. It had more of a mature undertone. This one, it wasn't mature. The adult themes in this one were more sort of kind of a hey, who's your father kind of thing, but that's it. Besides that, it was much more childish than Max Warp. Anyway, I'm saying, okay, it applies to a certain degree, but not 100%.
But that's my score, and I'm sticking to it.
So you should. I'm not trying to change your mind. Would you like to close this episode?
You have been listening to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. If you have liked Who Back When, then subscribe and rate on iTunes.
That'd be great.
If you want, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Marius Kane, and
that's Kane with K. And what am I, sorry?
At Ponkin.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I am. Like us on Facebook, if you haven't already. That way you can stay up to date with the latest Who Back When releases. We are facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word.
You can go to Reddit, that's /r/whobackwhen, and if you use Google Plus, do something else instead. If you have enjoyed this episode, then go to whobackwhen.com, where you can listen to new Who reviews, you can listen to classic Who reviews, and of course, Doctor Who audiobook reviews.
And the occasional bonus episode.
Thank you very much for listening. Ciao.
That's normally my sign-off. Bye. Rock on.
Who Back When?